The following Ask the Expert show is a paid advertisement provided by Aronson & Moss Law Firm, and airing of the program is not to be considered endorsement or recommendation. The opinions expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of WMT or Clear Channel Media and Entertainment.
Well, good morning and welcome to Ask the Expert. I'm Jim Doyne, along with Jim Raddick. Jim Raddick is an attorney with the Aronson & Moss Law Firm. Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim.
Did you bring your umbrella?
I left it in the car. Oh, I see. I'm taking my chances today.
Very good. Jim Raddick, you work with, in what area do you like to work in with Aronson & Moss?
My primary specialty at Aronson & Moss, what I do that other people don't do very much of, is the estate planning and probate work.
Mm-hmm.
That's not all I do. I do some bankruptcy work. We talk about
you
that
bet.
Here.
Yeah, yes, we did.
Every other week or so. And then I also work with people who are involved in all kinds of business matters, contract disputes, things of that nature.
Oh, you got a lot on your plate there, huh?
It's a varied practice. It keeps it interesting.
I'll bet it does. This morning, this is kind of an interesting area. I never thought of this, but you're going to talk estate planning, but what area in estate planning?
Well, today we're going to talk about situations where we have an individual who has lost or is losing their capacity to make decisions for themselves.
All right, now.
A little mental incapacity.
Then what
issues.
Do you do? So you have somebody in the family that's got an estate, and they're really not able to go ahead and make decisions. So how do you handle that?
Well, here's the interesting thing, is that when we talk about mental capacity or incapacity, there's kind of a range. You and me, we're fine.
Today.
At least, yeah, today, and if you don't ask the wrong people.
right.
And there are some people who clearly cannot act for themselves, and they belong perhaps, in the Alzheimer ward in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a range in between. What we would like to do as attorneys is be able to talk to people before they get to that point where they belong in the nursing home and can't make any decisions for themselves. That way we can plan ahead. But going back to your point, yes, what happens when they get to the point they can't make decisions for themselves? If they come in and I say, I don't know that they understand what I'm talking about, or that what they're telling me is going to be the same thing they'll say 5 minutes from now, I say they can't sign anything. Then what we have to do is we have to go to court, their court procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's what we hope we're going to be able to avoid by having people come in early and try and plan for these.
Well, do they make a decision? Maybe the individual is losing their abilities, but they think they're not. You
right.
find that?
Well, that happens sometimes, and in those cases, they're not going to want to do anything. So if somebody feels strongly about it and needs to press the issue, you go into court too. And the reason why I'm talking about court and saying we like to avoid it if we can is there are some, there's some time there's some time issues there, and there's definitely an expense because mm-hmm. you need to have an attorney prepare a certain set of documents. If somebody has mental issues, and they're not able to take care of their property, they're not able to take care of themselves, and you want to go into court, you have to get an attorney to file a petition. It's just like suing that person in a way, except mm-hmm. you're saying, I'm suing you, but I'm suing you to have somebody else named to come in and take care. If they come in and take care of your property, they're called a conservator. If they're going to take care of your lifetime decisions, where you live, what kind of medical treatment you get, et cetera, they're called a guardian. Sometimes you ask for both at the same time. But it's like a lawsuit, so we have to prepare the papers. It goes to the court, you get a notice. That notice has to be served on this individual. And because we recognize, hey, each of us has our rights, our fundamental rights, and that's to manage our own property or manage our own person, the court system is not going to just automatically take that away. You have to have what we call due process. And what that means is the statute says you have to have an attorney.
Well, I was going to say, even if I'm becoming mentally challenged, why do I want an estate plan?
Well, why do you want an estate plan? Because you've hopefully have been able to accumulate some things over life, and you have people that you really would still care for, children or relatives or friends or charity that you want those things to go to. And so if you don't have something planned, then it's either going to go into court And, you know, there's going to be, I was just talking about it, that there's got to be two attorneys, because the law says you have to appoint somebody to go and investigate and go to the court. And a lot of times when that second attorney's appointed to investigate, he says, yes, this person really needs some help, you go in the court and you tell them that. But there are times when it is challenged, and then you have proceedings that could go on for months and be very costly.
And the legal options then, if you don't plan without planning?
Well, that's what I was talking about.
Sure.
Just going into court and having somebody, there has to be somebody to step forward and say, I'm going to be a guardian or I'm going to be a conservator. One thing that I didn't talk about that happens sometimes, especially in cases with, Alzheimer's coming on when family members aren't necessarily able to step up right away, or they think it's really gotten bad and we didn't realize that we need to do something right away, is the mental commitment proceedings.
Mental commitment, that's interesting.
Mental commitment, yeah. The idea is that generally there's a serious mental impairment, and when we first hear about that, we probably think, oh, well, that means somebody who, you know, might be psychotic or, you know, paranoid or something like that, and they need to be treated by a psychiatrist. But the statute's actually a little bit broader. It talks about any kind of physical impairment to your mental facilities, you know, like a brain injury or something like that, or disease too. So Alzheimer's is a form of dementia that's a disease. If it's so bad that you're in your house or apartment and leaving the burner on and causing fires, your mental impairment is putting you at risk, a danger to yourself, and so you can be committed.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I assume that if you don't get hold of this early and before anything would happen, you can't have part of your estate going where you want it to go.
Well, that can certainly happen. I mean, if the person we're talking about is so incapacitated that they need to be mentally committed, or they need a guardian or a conservator, then probably we're not able to write a will for them if they don't have one.
Jim Raddick is my guest this morning. He's an attorney with Aronson & Moss Law Firm. We're talking about estate planning, especially mentally challenged, if that happens. Jim, how do they get a hold of you? If we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about this, but if they would like to talk more to you directly, how would they do that?
If they want to talk directly, they'll call me in my office. I work at Aronson & Moss. Our phone number is 319-363-8199. We also have a website. It's aronsonlaw.com, and you can contact us through that, too.
And Aronson & Moss Law Firm is located here in Cedar
Rapids.
Yeah,
we're located at Cedar Rapids, 425 Plaza. It's right next to the bus station.
Very good. We'll come back and talk more with Jim Raddick in just a moment. You're listening to Ask the Expert on 600 WMT.
News Radio 600 WMT.
Welcome back to Ask the Expert. I'm Jim Doyne, along with Jim Raddick. Jim Raddick is an attorney with Aronson & Moss Law Firm. We were talking this morning about estate planning and what to do if there happens to be a mental problem that goes along with that, which really complicates things, I would assume.
Right. And what I was doing is talking about the worst-case scenario, which is where you have to go to court. We don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. We want people to come in and talk with us so we can avoid this situation.
Absolutely.
Now, coming into the lawyer to do the planning doesn't stop the mental incapacity from happening, but what we do is we plan for what will happen then. And the advantage is you, the person who's making decisions, get to decide who is it that I trust that can help me, or how do I want this to be done and tailored individually for you, instead of having a court decide these things.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically have two ways to deal with this. One of them is to make what we call a power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
Which is done in advance. And for people who have bigger estates, more sophisticated planning, we can deal with some of these issues actually with the living trust mm-hmm. as part of it too.
Now, once they go into a living trust, several types of trust, and you get into one, you still get taxed, but if you get into the other, you don't have as much tax. So what do you recommend along those lines?
Well, the living trust is not per se a tax-saving vehicle.
No, okay,
no,
it's not an irrevocable.
No. Yeah, the only reason I brought that up is because when you have a living trust, you're dealing with the person's property, their valuables.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you set it up so that, for example, if I start a trust, I will be the trustee initially.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at some point in time, I may not be able to make decisions, so I need to have an individual who come in and substitute for me. That's a successor trustee. When you do that, then you've got somebody in place. You don't need to go to the court and say, Judge, we need a conservator for Jim or for whoever. If you don't have that trust, the way that you can make that plan ahead of time is to have what we call a general power of attorney, in that you say, I want so-and-so, my son, my wife, my daughter, my friend, my other relative, to be able to come in and deal with my money when I'm not able to do it myself.
So a power of attorney, if you give one to somebody, is just not necessarily a blanket situation. They can come in and work your finances at the time, right?
They are allowed to do whatever you authorize them to do in the document.
Very good.
They become your agent. And, and you know, that's something where what some people think is simple can potentially become complex.
Mm-hmm.
You may not want to give a person authority to do everything for you. You know, there's a new law that's going to go into effect on July 1 here in Iowa dealing with powers of attorney. And what it does now is it sets out different categories on a standard form that they use. I mean, you can still use other forms, and lawyers are going to be developing their own. But on the standard form, it's kind of like a check the box thing. Do you want to do with my banking accounts? That's one thing. Well, how about my investment accounts? That's another thing. How about my real estate? That's something else. You know, you don't have to give somebody authority over all of those. It could be one or more. You know, it's like a la carte.
Yeah, and that's a good. Now, when you were talking about going back to trust accounts and trustees, is that usually a bank or is that an individual, or something like financial?
Sometimes it's both. The living trust, the revocable living trust, the classic way to do it is to have the person who starts it be the trustee themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, so you still have full control, but when it does come to the point where you're not able to make those decisions by yourself anymore, it's not at all uncommon to have some professional help, to have a bank trust department or other trust department in control and do that. Or perhaps you have somebody else who is your successor trustee, and you authorize in the document, say, I allow, this person is allowed to use professional investment advisors, or you may even direct them to use professional investment advisors. It depends upon who you select and what you think their capabilities are.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned here standby. What do you mean by standby?
Yeah. The one other option we have for dealing with this situation ahead of time is if you don't want to give somebody a power of attorney now, because if you do and it's effective immediately and that person isn't honest, they can go out and steal all your money, essentially.
And but you can write it different, right?
Well, you can write it different, and you hope that helps. But if a person is dishonest and you don't know it, you're stuck.
Sure.
A standby is a chance for you to say, well, I know there are these court proceedings for having a conservator or a guardian, and at some point in the future that might be for me. I'm going to pick the person who's going to be the guardian. I'm going to pick the person who's going to be the conservator. We'll do the papers ahead of time. So when it comes, we can go into court, and there's not going to be any contest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be a consented to thing, and the court can do this and get the person appointed right away.
Now, so then the important thing, what you're saying here, is if you give power attorney, you better have some stipulations in there somewhere.
You want to have stipulations. You want to make a wise decision. And that's one of the places where I like to think that we can bring some value to people as we sit down and explore these. And, you know, we can tell them about situations that we faced. I was at a seminar yesterday, and the lawyer next to me had one where a person had Parkinson's, was in the nursing home. He left the will saying, I'm leaving everything in equal shares to my brothers and sisters and their nieces and nephews. His sister had a power of attorney, and what she did was she changed all his accounts so that when he died, they all went automatically to the four brothers and sisters who were still living. And the kids of the ones who had died didn't get any of those accounts.
Oh.
You know, so the change in the bank account overrode the will. And they had a fight about that. They went to court, and he was really disgusted that it had to go to that way, and he was also a little bit upset that they lost. But that's something that can happen, and if somebody comes to me and we talk about that, I want to explore that. How well do you know these people? What are your family dynamics? You know, is this going to be a good choice, or would we be better off picking somebody else or putting some more limitations in, et cetera?
That's very interesting. So you want to be very careful what you do, who you pick, or what stipulations you put in the actual contract of some kind, right?
Absolutely.
My goodness.
It's not really as simple as just picking up a form, checking a few boxes, and signing your name.
So be careful who you give the power of attorney to.
Absolutely.
Jim Raddick is my guest this morning. He's an attorney with Aronson & Moss Law Firm here in Cedar Rapids. And Jim, tell everybody where you can be reached, and if they'd like to discuss estate planning any further, how they can do that.
Absolutely. They can call me at our office number. That's 319-363-8199, and our website is aronsonlaw.com.
And come back and see us. You're going to be back here in a couple of weeks.
I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to it, Jim.
Can I have another phone number one more time?
363-8199.
Very good. Thanks for coming in this morning. You have a great day.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.